Pepin and the UFO Congress. And, of course, that is in Laughlin, Nevada, on the beautiful Colorado River with the Aquarius Casino Resort. We used to be at the Flamingo, but we didn't change locations, just names.
Just the name changed.
Yeah, and that's Rod Simone, and Rob, a broadcaster of his own right. And Rob, by the way, I want to compliment you. Finally got a book out. I don't know anybody that would be more qualified to write one than you.
Well, thanks, sir. I appreciate that.
The name of this book is UFO Crop Circles, The Mayan Calendar, Sacred Places, and a collection of articles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a compendium. I put together some of my research that has taken me around the world to various places of mystery, and I explore the kind of unusual surroundings of these sacred places.
Now, the book is just coming out, so it won't be available for a few weeks, right?
It'll be available next week, so by the time this airs, it'll be available.
Okay, well, yeah. We won't take this long this time. This show will be on tomorrow. So.
Oh, very good.
Or the day after, time period. So beginning next week, they can order this book. Will it be available at certain places?
Yeah, absolutely. Through the website on Amazon, if they go to robsimone.com, it's R-O-B-S-I-M-O-N-E, robsimone.com, they can find it there.
Now, when we talk about this book and the articles and your world travel, we went right through that in one little sentence.
We did.
But that
was the headline.
Yeah, you're right. But you have... Not only been doing a UFO broadcast for a long time, but in addition to that, you've been out doing your own research, and I know you've spoken at conventions.
That's right. This book represents sort of the first step that I've taken to put in a concise way some of the research that's taken me around the world. I have an article about the NASA footage that has been making such a large stir lately. What I've done through my radio show is interviewed some of the people that are key witnesses in the UFO-NASA connection, like Dr. Edgar Mitchell. Now, he was the sixth man to walk on the moon, right? Apollo 14. But he said something extraordinary. He said that through his connections, through his network of people in the military intelligence, they have confirmed to him that the government does have alien technology, even bodies of extraterrestrials through some sort of mishap, perhaps, through their craft. He's confirmed this through various sources. He's gone on the record and said it. And he himself is a proponent of what I like to call ufology, this emerging science. And he's one of the leaders. He even founded the Noetic Institute of Science up in California.
So he was told firsthand that there are E.T. creatures, bodies.
Right.
I assume from crashes.
Well, we have to assume that. We have to assume that. But he himself is a genuine explorer. And when he took his ride into space, he had a sort of metaphysical, transcendental experience. He, for lack of a better word, was able to almost touch, you know, the face of God while he was spinning around in that little spaceship hurling through space. So that changed him forever. And he is, as I say, someone who's very important. That's one of the first articles in there. And the other ones dive into various aspects that on the surface might seem unrelated, but they really aren't. Because there's an article in there about the Mayan calendar, which is only 5 years away from ending, by the way.
I understand that. And some people say the date may be translated a little differently, may even be quicker.
Well, the 2012 cycle is the grand cycle of the Mayan calendar. It is the largest and the most significant of the Mayan calendar because there are so many different cycles. And what's even more significant, and what I point out in the book here, is that it ends December 21st, 2012, but the exact time that it ends is 11:11 a.m.
11/11/2012.
And that's extraordinary because you've probably heard people talking about this 11/11 that everyone's seeing when they. And I too have had sort of inexplicable urges to look at a clock. And when I do, more often than not, it'll say something with 11 in it.
Hmm.
Yeah, so that's an interesting little tidbit, but it goes on to explore the cycles, the Mayan calendar, what they mean, and even Mayan astrology, which is getting more and more validation. From research groups.
What makes that different than, there's all kinds of astrology,
yep.
I know.
That's true.
But Is there something that makes Mayan astrology different? I mean, do they use different planets, or?
Well, that's,
or do we know?
Yeah, well, to answer that question, I'd have to tell you a little bit about the Mayan calendar and why it's so significant.
Yeah, let's get into that.
Yeah, because this is the extraordinary thing. The Mayans had this incredibly sophisticated calendar, and it still baffles researchers and scholars as to how they were able to assemble such an accurate way of measuring the workings of the cosmos. See, what their calendar is based on is the cycles and rotation of the stars and planets.
Mm-hmm.
So it is tied into the movements of our solar system and the universe. So that is where they derive their sense of time. Now, the other interesting thing is they were aware of something called precession. Precession is the wobble that the Earth has that's very slight. The Earth, of course, is on an axis. It's tilted slightly. But even that tilt has a slight wobble to it, which means the North Star, every 3,000-6,000 years, goes through a small circular rotation. But here's the kicker. They would have never have been able to know that, because it takes 3,000 years to observe precession.
But they had...
They knew it somehow. Mm-hmm. So they were incredibly sophisticated. They had no way, no telescopes, no devices to speak of. They simply used, from what we know, keen observation, keen record keeping. And some have postulated that they might have had a little sort of extra-dimensional help.
Extra-dimensional, huh?
It could be that...
I thought maybe it was extraterrestrial, but uh-huh. It could be extra-dimensional.
Yeah. Well, I say extra-dimensional because extraterrestrial comes under the umbrella of extra-dimensional. Okay. That's a broader term.
Okay, so, that's an intelligent way to describe it. You can't prove you wrong. Not as easily.
Right.
See, Rob, it's no...
Yeah, so they have this incredible timekeeping system, and maybe they had some help. Maybe they were pushed in the right direction, because here is the point that brings it home to everybody right now who has a calendar hanging up in their home. The calendar that you have now is the Gregorian calendar, and what happened is that many years ago, I hate to call them out again, but it was the church that decided that they were tired of having their religious holidays move a little bit every year.
It's kind of like U.S. Congress. They were tired of not getting Mondays off, so they moved the President's Day over to Monday and a lot of other things.
Well, the church has specific holidays, and they've always had them for saints and other things. Now, every year, since the calendar is a little uneven, that's why we have leap year, they would shift around, and they didn't want that. So they brought in this Gregorian calendar. They brought in the leap year. They brought in this calendar that doesn't quite fit. And the result of that is that we have taken off ourselves from true time, which is time measured by the cycles of the universe, and we have moved to this artificial way of measuring time. And when we did that as a society, we short-circuited our intuition. We short-circuited our connection to the natural rhythms and cycles of the universe.
So in other words, you put a lot of stake, or a lot of stock, and you stake a lot of things information-wise on the idea that the Mayan calendar is pretty accurate.
Not only is it incredibly accurate, but they predicted events as well. They discovered the planet Pluto many, many years before it was officially discovered by Western scholars. And they even predicted the landing of Cortez as sort of a false god or a false prophet. And he landed on their shores and conquered that poor hapless civilization just as they predicted.
And they're predicting 11-11-2012.
That is the end
and
of
what,
the...
That just ends the calendar, right?
That's the end of the grand cycle,
so,
as it's called.
We don't know what they mean by the end of the calendar, or do we?
Well, actually, we know a few things.
Okay, what do we know?
We know this, that our solar system and its planets that orbits the sun is part of a larger galaxy called the Milky Way. Now, I want you to picture the Milky Way as it's a thin galaxy. In other words, it's a spiral galaxy, but it's along a very sort of a wide plane. It's not a ball. It's more like a disk. And everything spins around, and we're kind of way out in the middle. But it is a disc. It's not a ball, so it's flat. And here's what we do know that does tie into this Mayan calendar and perhaps explains some of it. Our solar system not only spins around, but it also moves up and down. And what happens is it moves up and kind of away from all of the center of the disk and moves out into sort of empty space. It takes about 36,000 years to do this. And then it starts to come back into more of the dense part of where all the planets and where all the other stars and other things that are that make up the dense part of this of our galaxy. So we're truly entering into a different part of space. Now, the increased density of this space could have an inherent power, inherent energy that might activate, say, dormant stargates that are present on this planet. It could activate us in some way because we truly are entering a more energetic part of space.
Right, you've been around the world, literally.
Yeah.
You were on a 2-year trek, if I remember.
It was actually 3.5 years through 27 different countries.
See, I didn't remember.
But you were close. You were close. That's good. That's good.
What do you make of this Stargate story? I mean, we hear about them all the time.
We
portals, et cetera, et cetera.
We do.
What do you think of all that?
That's such a great area because I believe that 2012 is going to bring us into some sort of paradigm shift. We're entering into a denser part of the universe. We see reflections of this starting to happen already. For take example, the Schumann resonance, which is the natural resonance of the Earth. It is rising from 8.6 hertz. To approximately 10.2 hertz. And the reason why that's extraordinary is because there are correlations to the human brainwave activity that happens at that same frequency, 10 hertz. That's where the mind resonates at. That's where the brain frequency is for most humans. And I say most humans because I know there's a few people out there that might be a little higher or lower. But why is that extraordinary? Well, anyone who knows anything about radio and sine waves and things like that, if you have two matching frequencies and you bring them into resonance, they strengthen each other and they become coordinated. And that sort of approach is what Tesla talked about. It's what Tesla was saying. And that's how some of his extraordinary inventions worked. So we're seeing a rise in the Schumann resonance. And as you say, I did travel all through these different countries, and a large portion of that was the Middle East. And I spent a lot of time out in areas near Mesopotamia, near Egypt, out in the deserts. And what I found more and more through looking through these tombs and crawling through these ancient temples were references to these places, these energized places that these ancient civilizations knew about in some way, shape, or form, believed that they could use them to enter into another dimension or could bring people through. And it's often sort of coded in their gods and their deities. So you have to look at Horus. You have to look at the gods of the underworld. You have to look at Osiris. But the messages that run through these various sort of coded hieroglyphs is that they believed in some sort of place, some sort of temple that did more than just house the bodies of dead pharaohs. They believed it was a conduit or some sort of gateway that could be activated. And that technology, that knowledge is lost. And I don't think it was by accident. Supposedly there was a library underneath the Sphinx called the Alexandria Library. And again, we're going back to the great Vatican and the big religion, but it is often thought that it was them who scooped up this knowledge, and it now sits in some deep, dark catacomb underneath Vatican City.
Well, the interesting thing about that is that we did a show recently with some people from Portugal, professors, about the Lady of Fatima legend. And no one at the Catholic Church had actually looked at it since 1925. And they let these people in to look at it.
Okay.
And so it would make sense. It's buried someplace, and nobody's bothered to even read it recently.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's possible.
That's right. Not only has the actual information been gathered up, but the information that has survived has been discredited and has been disinformed, meaning it has been put in sort of this skeptical garbage bin that nobody wants to touch. Mainstream science doesn't want to touch it. But in that arena...
Nor do the religious people.
That's right. And they have their own sort of superstitions and unusual beliefs. You just look at the, let's look at the Catholic religion, because we just talked about them. Do you know what it means to be a saint? In their religion, you have to perform at least one miracle. And if you look through the list of saints, you'll see that some of them had, for instance, some sort of body sweat that could heal people. Some of them were able to fly. Some of them were able to turn invisible. So woven into the Catholic dogma is the same sort of paranormal manifestations that we in the alternative information community talk about so much.
You mentioned looking for signs and messages.
Mm-hmm.
We'll be right back in a moment. I don't know of anything more mysterious, and maybe there's signs and messages there in crop circles.
Mm.
And your book starts off with UFO crop circles, and we talked about the Mayan calendar, the second part of the book, and the sacred places, a collection of articles. So when we come back, Rob Simone will tell us about his impression and his investigations of crop circles. Don't go away. The biggest secret ever is about to be revealed. Fast Walkers, UFO and alien disclosure.
Words you were never meant to hear.
It's clear we're dealing with a cosmic Watergate.
This is the biggest secret in the history of the human race, the known modern history of government.
Photos you were never meant to see. Video you never knew existed. People you were never meant to meet.
As Jack Nicholson would say, you can't handle the truth.
Essentially everything that you would want to know has been covered up.
Things you were never meant to know about.
No one has produced a higher quality, better produced DVD. Anytime, anywhere. Fast Walkers, now available on DVD for only $19.95 at shopjerrypippin.com. We are at the UFO Congress, and we're in Laughlin, Nevada. We're talking with our good friend Rob Simone, who is a broadcaster in his own right. Now he's got a book out. We'll be next week, called The UFO Crop Circles, A Mayan Calendar, and Sacred Places, A Collection of Articles. Mm-hmm. And we will have a link there for this book so people can get it. It'll be available at what?
Through the website. I'm sure the link will take you right there. It's available at robsimone.com.
Okay. Mm-hmm. We will definitely link to that so people can get that book.
Thanks.
And in addition to that, now we're talking about books. Before I get into what we talked about at Crop Circles, It's not too easy to write a book, even when you take things you've written already and decided what you're going to use.
Hmm.
Don't you agree?
It's
or was
true.
This just a piece of cake?
Well, I've actually written another book that's over 300 pages that is my complete research around the world. This is kind of the prequel. This sets up this sets the stage for various places and the interconnectivity of a different sort of paranormal manifestations like crop circles and stone circles and the Mayan calendar that on the surface might look like different subjects, but I demonstrate there is a common theme running through all of them.
And the common theme is a different dimension, a different reality, or what?
Well, in a nutshell, the common theme is ever since man and woman were able to scratch out an image on a cave wall, they have been leaving symbols and leaving markers that point to some sort of off-world visitation. It's woven into the cave paintings that go back 30,000 years, not only in France, but in Australia and in Africa, separated by thousands and thousands of miles. It's woven into the medieval art. It's woven into the Vedas and Upanishads of India, into the Holy Quran, into the Old Testament. On and on, we have an ongoing presence of some sort of off-world contact that manifests itself in different ways.
I've been inclined to agree with you completely on that. Mm-hmm. And one thing I want to ask you along that line before we get to crop circles,
yeah,
is can we pin down who planted us? In other words, we're the Garden of Eden, maybe, or whatever, maybe just a story, mm-hmm. or it may be real in a certain extent or a certain circumstance, but it appears to me that we were placed here and developed.
Hmm.
Do you think that happened?
Well, there are...
It looks like they dropped us off here or something.
Hmm. And why do people think that?
To me, the explanations of some of the things not only in the Bible or the Old Testament, but mm-hmm. there's almost no other explanation for it.
Well, for example, there are reasons why people have trouble with this evolution of mankind. They can see it in the plants and the fauna that makes up so much of this earth. But when it comes to man, we're missing a very important missing link. And we can also point to the fact that genetically, we're much closer, almost compatible with a chimpanzee. But we are not as close to a gorilla. So we are very close in our genetic makeup to the chimpanzee species of monkeys, but not the gorilla. So it seems as though we are half earth-based and half something else. And there was a recent article that just came out that points to our DNA as being largely off-world. This just came out in New Scientific America. It was recently published. It made a big splash through the internet. And it confirmed what a lot of people realize, is that our DNA somehow, some way, was transported here from other places.
That's what I'm getting at. Yeah. They may not have literally dropped a human being off. Mm-hmm. They may have, and the reason I use the term planted is developed would probably be a better word. Mm-hmm. We somewhat did evolve in some way or another, mm-hmm. and it just seems there's a big gap there, and we seem to be able to explain a lot of other things.
We can't find the missing link, and we see time and time again as the creator gods in various indigenous cultures being represented as people coming from the sky, people having appetites for local women, people, gods that embody some sort of human form. We see this all over again. In fact, I recently talked at the Conscious Life Expo, and I talked about my time in Australia. I lived there for a year, and I spent a lot of time with the Aborigines. Now, their creator god legends are fascinating because they sound very much like ancient astronauts, insofar as they would come down regularly. They even knew what kind of food that they liked. When they wanted something, they would point to it. And the craft that these creator gods would use was described as an egg, and it even made a sound. And the Aboriginals described the sound as a bull roar. Now, for those of you who don't know what a bull roar is, it is a specially shapened piece of wood, carved wood, on the end of a string. And they would spin this around at great velocity, would make this this very low growling sound. And the Aboriginals used this to communicate over long distances. Because this low frequency would travel very far.
Right.
But if you can imagine what that sort of sound would approximate, it would sound very close to perhaps a large jet engine, a large rocket engine, and having no other frame of reference, a bull roar would be the closest thing that they could compare it to. So time and time again, we see these creator gods in the form of ancient astronauts, and these are the ones that the ancient peoples refer to as their creators.
We're talking with Rob Simon, and we talk about all of this being related, and that brings me back to the crop circles, full circle, and the first part of your book is UFOs and crop circles, or UFO crop circles.
Crop circles.
I always thought crop circles were ET art. It's just my own personal opinion. But from listening to you and others who have researched a lot in this book, maybe it's more of a message. What do you think it is?
Well, you know, art often has a message. Sometimes art is for art's sake, but I think in the case of crop circles, it's safe to say that it's more of a message than it is about a pretty picture. Now, in this book, you refer to an article I wrote about crop circles, and it's called The Message and the Mechanics, because there are two components to this. There's the experience, and then there's the sort of analytical study of the physical nature of them. And I talk about both. Now, as far as the experience goes, I and many others have reported very strong reactions, very strong experiences when you venture into a crop circle that seems to be legitimate. In other words, that doesn't seem to be man-made. And I had an incredible experience in one of them. One morning, I was up very early because I used to work in London. I lived there for a year. And I still produce a radio show that airs there. And so I spent a lot of time out in the fields, because the funny part is that most of the crop circles that happen all over the world happen in a 20-mile radius of Avebury, which is right next to Stonehenge, which is only an hour and a half outside of London. So it's very accessible. And I managed to get there and spent a lot of time there. And one morning I found one that looked like it had just been made. I think steam was coming off of this thing. I mean, it looked brand new, and nobody else was around. There was no tracks leading up to it or away from it. And when I entered into this thing, I was taken over with what I can only call an out-of-body experience. And I talk about that in the book. And through this powerful metaphysical experience, I felt as though I was somehow in touch with intelligences that were not, say, of this earth. Now, I am not unique in this. Other people have had similar experiences, both good and bad. I know people that walked into these crop circles and had to be taken out and were unable to move for 2 days.
By you mean they were comatose or something, or fall or blithering, or what?
They felt as though, I remember one person that came on my radio show said that she had just felt as though all the energy was drained out of her, and she was simply unable to do anything for 2 days. Other people report euphoria.
I started to say, I've had people tell me about they just have an emotional uplift.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What happened to you?
Well, I had a combination. I ventured into some sort of subconscious state that I can only describe as like a sort of an astral plane, perhaps. And in that, I was in some sort of instantaneous communication with these intelligences that, as I say, did not seem to be earthbound, did not seem to be originate from this earth. And what they imparted to me was that they have a limited access into our physical world. And one of those limited avenues was this transfer of energy that takes place out near this area. Now, whether it has something to do with this very mystical area that happens to be very close to Stonehenge, I'm not sure. If it has to do with the geology, it's unclear. But it is clear that they have been going on there for the better part of a 200 years. They've been reported back in the 1800s in this same part of Wiltshire, which is, as I say, very close to London.
Of course, crop circles happen other places too.
Yep,
but
it's
England
true.
Is the most famous.
They're popping up everywhere.
What do you make of it all? I mean, what is the deal?
Mm.
I
asked the same question to the farmers.
Yeah.
That live out there. There's a great pub called the Barge Inn, where a lot of this research takes place. And the pub owner, of course, have lived there for quite a long time, and he tells me that there are ley lines that crisscross this area. And ley lines are these sort of natural forming bands of energy that crisscross the earth. And a lot of people have tied them into the very sacred places like the pyramids of Egypt. And he reckoned that that had something to do with the abundance of crop circles in that area. And he even told me that a ley line ran right through his bar, and that the farmers somehow knew it. Because he said, when the men come in, they always sit on that side of the ley line, and when the women come in, for some reason, they sit on the other side. And sure enough, when he told me that, I looked around, and he was absolutely right.
Is that because the female psyche is different than us males, or what?
I think it might have to do with some sort of polarization of energy.
Mm-hmm.
But more than that, he described to me that, and it's very seldom, is it talked about, but the farmers have had experiences, and they've had abduction experiences that relate to these crop circles, and that some of that is in this book when I talk about the people who actually plant the crops.
So you do cover abductions, too, in the book?
On a limited basis, as the farmers themselves tell it.
What do you make of abductions? You've been, I mean, we can't go to these UFO congresses without... And other conventions without abductees talking to us.
It's true.
And you're in the media, too.
Absolutely. It's a part of this. And not only is it a current phenomenon, but as my research shows, it's been happening to the indigenous peoples going back thousands of years. So it's nothing new.
Rob Simone, it's always a pleasure talking with you. The name of the book is UFOs, Crop Circles, the Mayan Calendar, and Sacred Places, a collection of articles. How much is this book?
The price has not been determined. If you go to the website, okay. By the time this airs, I'm sure it'll be up there.
Leave it to me to ask a question we don't have an answer for.
I'm sure it'll be answered soon enough. It literally just came out that you're looking at the first copy that has ever been printed.
Well, thank you very much. Mm-hmm. It's a very interesting book. You have lots of pictures in there, too.
Over 50 pictures. I took most of them myself. Of the stone circles. There's a stone circle in Sweden that very few people know about.
You've been hanging out in California more or less.
Los Angeles.
Recently.
That's where I live, yeah.
You going to stay there for a while?
I am in Los Angeles. It is where there's a lot of activity going on. I'm hoping to produce several television shows related to these phenomenons. And more on that, I guess, as it develops.
Well, great. We'll stay in contact. Well, always a pleasure to see you. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Jerry.
Roberta Scott, our location producer, James Swartley, our technical editor. Until next time, this is Jerry Pippin from the UFO Congress. Cheers.
The doors are finally open at ShopJerryPippin.com. Explore our new iShop. It's open and growing. You can use any major credit card or your checking account with our PayPal connection. Our first edition t-shirt selections features 3 different Jerry Pippin UFO files designs. In addition, we will be adding collector t-shirts from select UFO conferences, as well as several novelty items. Check us out at ShopJerryPippin.com.